And I am grateful to be here with you. I have been traveling some. It's on, guys. Help the brother out.
I enjoy the travels that I have the opportunity to take. I enjoy coming home. Enjoy being with you. Miss you when I'm gone. It's always good to be back with you. Enjoyed this morning being able to listen to Doug preach, and I'll enjoy tonight having the opportunity to say a few things myself. The guys back in the sound room made fun of my title. The word here, you may not be able to read that. Rather small. This comes from a story in Matthew chapter 12, obviously, where Jesus is speaking to a large group of people, and at a certain point, his mother and brothers show up outside, and they'd like to talk with him a little bit. And it's difficult to get a sense, in some ways, of exactly what Jesus' relationship with his physical family was like sometimes. And we know what things were like in the early days. Jesus grew up and was listening and attentive to his parents, with the exception of that one incident when he was 12 years old. We don't have a whole lot of information. We do know that when he gets to be of age, when he gets to be nearly 30 years old and starts his ministry, that his family was a bit taken aback by some of the things that were going on, and that particularly his brothers may have been a bit slow to dismiss the presumptuousness of this older brother who now has decided he's some kind of a religious leader and is challenging some of the religious establishment. Don't have any reason to believe that his mother was not supportive of his ministry. But you'll recall, even at the time of Jesus' death on the cross, he may have had some question about his brothers providing care for his mom, perhaps because she had supported Jesus and they had not. We do know later on at least two or three of Jesus' brothers indeed were believers and became leaders in the church. But what their purpose was for seeing Jesus is unclear. Maybe they wanted just to talk with him about some family business. Perhaps they were here to question whether or not he was really doing what he needed to do. We just don't have any information on that. But what we do know is this provided an opportunity for Jesus. And Jesus is always looking for an opportunity to teach very important lessons. Sometimes at what you and I might seem to see as rather unorthodox or unusual moments. On this occasion, a messenger simply comes into the place where Jesus is surrounded by others and said, you know, your mother and sister, your mother and brothers would like to talk to you, would like to see you. And Jesus just asked this question, who are my mother and my brothers? And so, when he was still speaking to the crowd, his mother and brothers came, stood outside, asking to speak to him, but he replied with this question, who is my mother and who are my brothers? Now, if it were Mark Blackwelder sitting in a crowded room of people, and you said, hey, your mom and your brother and sister are outside, they'd like to talk to you, I doubt very seriously this is what I would have said. I might have said, what are they doing here? I mean, because that would be a good trip for them to come over just to ask. But I wouldn't have said, who are they? Because everybody knows their family, right? Obviously, Jesus has got something else in mind. I want to pose this question to you. How do you decide who is in your family? Now, that may seem kind of like a ludicrous question for you. You're perhaps sitting there saying, well, Mr. Silly, you don't decide who's in your family. You're just kind of stuck with them. I mean, you know, my parents had me, and much to my chagrin, they decided to have my siblings, and here we are. You know, I didn't get to choose. Well, you know, as it turns out, we did. I chose my wife. In a moment of weakness, she chose me back. And then when the time came for us to have kids, we did not have them biologically. We went through a process of adoption in Slovakia, and we went through psychological testing and a whole bunch of other kinds of hoops we had to jump through. And at a certain point, they just sent us a letter and said, okay, start visiting the orphan homes in the country and pick some out. Wow. Pick out a human being, somebody that's going to be a part of your family. Can you imagine? I mean, we don't have to imagine, but even at the time, we felt like, I think you would probably feel like, what a daunting task is that? I mean, you go, here are all these little kids in these orphanages, 4,500 at the time that we went. And as far as we know, there were three adoptions that year, and we were two of them. All these kids needed a home. What do you look for? How do you decide who's in your family? Well, I'm going to talk about that in just a minute, but I do want to tell you this. I don't remember exactly when it was. We began to hear some things from Alex about what he thought happened. We told him very openly about the process and things like that, but he began eventually giving us more information. And finally, we realized this is what he thought happened. This is the conveyor belt at a grocery store. In his mind's eye, we had just gone through there, picked them up, taken them through the checkout line, and brought them home. Not exactly like that, but it did involve going to these orphans' homes and having all these little kids crowd around you, and your heart just goes out to all of them. I don't have to tell you how to imagine that. If you don't take them home, most of them are destined to live out their childhood in this institution where they have enough to eat, fortunately, and a place to sleep at night. There were like 5 staff members in the orphans' home where we found our children, 5 staff members for 105 kids. They're not getting a lot of attention. When Alex was 1 year old, he had never even attempted to crawl. He had spent most of his life in that bed. And then with the time we got ready to bring them home, the psychologist, a young lady who had stayed there to help us with the last of the details, we gave her a ride back to her house, and she turned to Alex and basically asked him, "So, Alex, how does it feel to be outside?" He was 1 year old. He'd never been out of that building. He was born in that building. There's a hospital in one wing and an orphan's home in the other wing, and he just had lived out his entire existence there. All these kids were like that, and that's what the rest of them had to look forward to. How do you choose? How do you choose who is in your family? Well, obviously, this is not a sermon about adoption. This is about what Jesus said and what point he was trying to make. So let's think about how you might decide. You could decide on the basis of affection. In other words, I like this person or these people. I think I'll make them a part of my family. But of course, that gets the order wrong, doesn't it? We don't feel affectionately toward our family members and then make them family members. We feel affectionately toward them because they're our family members. We care about them in ways that are different from the ways that we might normally feel about people because they're a part of our family. Besides, we don't always feel that affectionately toward members of our family, do we? Maybe it's because you're alike, maybe shared interests. You might choose people to be in your family because you like similar things or because you have certain personality traits that are comparable. You feel like you'd be a good match. You'd be compatible. That's the language we use when we talk about finding a spouse, right? With someone with whom we might find ourselves to be compatible. If you met my brother, you would find that we are family members in spite of having virtually nothing in common. And I suspect ours is not the only family where that's true. We are very different from one another, so I doubt, first of all, most of you are hoping there's not anybody else out there that's all that similar to me. So probably that's not going to work for us. Well, this one might seem kind of like that. Appearance. People through the years have commented an awful lot about how much Beata and Alex look like us. That's, to a great extent, just a coincidence. That's just kind of how people of their ethnic group in Slovakia look, for the most part. And I always equate the way that they look like us to be similar to what happens when a couple's been married for like 60 years. You know, it's amazing how much they start looking alike, isn't it? It happens when you spend a lot of time together, I suppose. But probably not the most important criterion by which to decide if you'd like to bring somebody into your family. Well, what about certain skills and abilities that they might have? I think they'd be a good fit because they can. That sounds silly even to say it, doesn't it? That's not how families come together. That's not the kinds of things that cause us to say they're in the same family because of any of these things, really. I've got members of my family I don't have anything like that with. Other members of my family, more broadly, that I do. And then I've got some of these kinds of things with people who are not in my family. Right? I suspect you do as well. So how do you decide? Well, Jesus follows up on his own questions frequently. He asks what appear to us to be a rhetorical question. Who are my mother and brothers? And then he says, here they are. here. And that's the reason why that word is so big on my first slide. Here. In this place, in this moment, here are my brother and my mother. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. How do we decide? Or maybe, more importantly, how does God decide who is in His family? You probably will not be surprised to find out that none of the things that were on my previous list are the things that God looks for. Think about it. We had nothing to offer Him. We were sinners. We were dead in our trespasses and sins. We were enemies, Romans chapter 5 of His. And yet, He chose to go through a tremendous process resulting in the death of His only Son for the sake of bringing us into His family. We have no abilities that are particularly noteworthy. Nothing that we could offer that would cause God to say, you know, I really need him around, or I really need her because he or she can do nothing like that. Nothing about our parents. He made us. He knows what we look like. We may have made a mess of that over a period of time, but nonetheless, when you think about what it is that would cause God to say, I want him in my family, none of those things really applies. How do we see God making this choice? How is it that God does this? And Jesus provides a piece of the answer to that, but in terms that may be a little off-putting to us. Think about this. I want to be around this person if they do what I want them to do. If I make that statement, how does that sound? Sounds pretty selfish, doesn't it? Pretty egocentric. Is that what God is? Yeah, I'll be willing to have them in my family if they will just do what I'm... Isn't that what Jesus says here? If they will obey my commandments? I want you to notice something here. Jesus does... First of all, I want you to notice what Jesus does not say. Jesus does not say they can be in my family if they will do what I want them to do. Big difference. They will be in my family if they will do what my Father wants. Can I rewind just a little bit? 18 years or so later, earlier, excuse me, 18, 19 years earlier. The story that I alluded to earlier, the one story we have from Jesus' childhood. Jesus spends 3 days in the temple beyond the time when he and his family were supposed to be traveling on to his hometown in Galilee. And he is having conversations with the priests and other personnel there in the temple, and they are amazed at the quality of his responses to their questions. He asks questions of them, which are thoughtful questions. And he's obviously received some very good instruction at the hands of his parents and is highly motivated to know God, to know God's will. And so when his parents show up on the third day, after two long days of travel, one day out and one day back, and then the day, part of the day at least, looking around the city for him, find him in the temple there, and Jesus asked another one of those questions, those rhetorical questions. Did you not know that I would be in my Father's house or about my Father's business? And I want you to reflect with me for just a few minutes about what that means. What does it mean, first of all, for Jesus to be about his Father's business or in his Father's house? And second of all, how does that help us to understand something about Jesus' response here that changes this from a selfish response, I'll like you if you do what I want, to something far more significant? What does it mean when Jesus says, didn't you know that I must be about my Father's business or in my Father's house? He's making a statement of priority. And at least part of what he's saying is, I care more about my Father's business than anything else. I think you know that. See, Jesus is assuming that his parents would already know that about him. Now, That doesn't necessarily mean that he is chiding them for not starting their search in the temple, because there are an awful lot of places where Jesus could have been about his Father's business besides right there, even if they were thinking in those terms. But they're thinking about a 12-year-old boy. And Jesus hadn't started his miraculous ministry yet. He hasn't been holding court in downtown Nazareth, instructing people theologically. He's a boy. But now, on this day, he tells them something which he believes they are already beginning to discover. And that is, his Father's business is of high priority to him. Now, when you reflect on that, and then read the text that's behind me right now, what is it that Jesus is actually saying to those who come to him with this request? Obviously, this is not about renouncing his relationship with his mother and his brothers. Clearly, Jesus was concerned about their well-being. I've already alluded to the fact that John records in the last chapter or so of the Gospel of John, last couple chapters of the Gospel of John, that he is continuing to see to the well-being of his mother even when he is hanging there in pain on the cross. This is not a guy who is disenfranchising himself from his family. This is not a guy who says, I don't care about them. They're not important to me anymore. But just as his statement in Acts 2:49, I must be about my Father's business, is a statement of values, so also is this. Jesus is telling us how he decides who is in his family. A question which you and I would have a very difficult time answering, Jesus has already thought about and is ready to provide an answer. He says, those who have God's will as a priority in their lives are in my family. See, God decides about who is in his family on the basis of relationship. For Jesus, the most important part of any relationship is the spiritual part. Now, if what we know a bit from Scripture and then some from extra-biblical history is true, several of the members of Jesus' family eventually became believers. And Jesus would have rejoiced at that reality. We do not know if they all did. We don't know that they didn't. But what we do know is that Jesus was not deciding who is important in his life and who is really connected to him relationally on the basis of blood. Or, for that matter, on the basis of growing up together. What he says is, I'm looking for people to be a part of my family who are concerned about pleasing God the way I'm concerned about pleasing God. When Jesus prayed in Matthew chapter 6, taught his disciples to pray, gives us this model. You remember that after he opened that prayer up with honoring and glorifying God, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. He said, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Jesus' ultimate wish was to see the state of affairs here on this world be something that would honor God. He lived his life in view of that. Now here's what I would suggest. If you want to be in relationship with Jesus, you'll have to be about his Father's business, because that's where he'll be. If you can kind of back into this with me. If you want to be with Jesus, you need to be where he is. And if you want to be where he is, you'll have to be about his Father's business. This is not a matter of Jesus saying, it's got to be my way or the highway. It's his way of saying, this is where you can find me. Please join me. When Jesus' mother and brothers showed up outside, there's no reason for us to think that he was not interested in talking to them, but there is a lot of reason to think that Jesus wanted to talk to that group that was gathered around there about what it meant to be in relationship with God and Jesus Christ. And he uses that moment to tell us something about what he is up to and how that affects the relationship of anybody else who is interested with him and with the Father. When we seek to be in relationship with God, we follow the direction that we find in Scripture. Not because God is difficult to get along with and because he has to be in charge and have things his way or he's not interested. The truth of the matter is, God is not going to have everything His way in this life. People, even good people, are going to sin, make mistakes of various kinds. They are going to behave often selfishly. They're going to be stubborn and proud. Does that sound familiar to anybody, or is it just me? But we can be in relationship with God because of Jesus. And we can know, not only because of the commands that we find in Scripture, but because we know what Jesus is up to. We know where He is. We know what is important to Him. And if we would pursue relationship, if we would be in His family, we will be about His Father's business, because that's what He does. That's what He values. I've heard through the years, and I've struggled myself with trying to come up with a way to balance this persistent emphasis on obedience that we find in Scripture with the grace that I see so freely offered through Jesus Christ. And this is where I think I found it. If you want to be with Jesus, you have to be where He is, and you will find Him about His Father's business. And if you will be about His Father's business, you will be in His family. Jesus takes the opportunity to find a moment to talk a little bit about His priorities. In John chapter 4 and verse 34, He does this in another way. His disciples come and He's been talking with this Samaritan woman. They say, "Don't you want something to eat?" You remember Jesus' response there? "Don't you want some meat?" they said. He said, "My meat is to do the will of the Father and to finish His work." Over and over and over again, Jesus tells us what it is that's important to Him. And then He invites us to join Him in the doing of that. Not because God is harsh and disagreeable and always has to have His way, but because when you want to please God as much as Jesus wanted to please God, it's a very natural thing both to do it and to invite others to join you in the doing of it. We don't obey God because we're afraid He might blast us if we don't. We obey Him because we love Him so much, as Jesus did, that submission seems like the only legitimate response to that love. When you really love somebody else, you serve them. Really. Don't you do this? Don't you have relationships like that? I bet you do. I bet you in your home have relationships like that. You love people enough to serve them. Jesus' entire life was an example of what that kind of love looks like. And His every communication was designed to bring us into relationship, a relationship of the same character as the relationship that He had with the Father. See, because Jesus realized something. If God is my Father, and God is Jesus' Father, and Jesus is my brother, it just happens like that. Jesus wants to be in relationship with us. But if you want to be in a relationship with Him, you'll have to be about His Father's business. I think I could say, and some of you could as well, something very similar to what Jesus says on this occasion. I probably would not answer in this way if my parents were to show up and be out here in the lobby and one of you alerted me to it. But it is certainly true of me that I have relationships with you and others which are so important to me. Relationships at various times in my life which have been more important to me than the relationship that I have with my physical family. Because we share something overwhelmingly more important. Here are my mother and my brothers. And we have the opportunity to share in something very beautiful, something very intimate, and something very powerful. This series of lessons that Doug and I will be preaching over the next several weeks, continuing that series, is designed to call us together into a kind of fellowship, I think, that is very much like what Jesus is talking about here. Of all the metaphors that are used in Scripture to describe the church, it is probably the metaphor of the family that helps us most to understand fellowship. And I hope that we will be seeking that and that we will be dissatisfied with anything less than intimacy and the kind of relationship that Jesus cared so much about. Are you enjoying that kind of relationship with God and the people of God? Are you a part of the family? When you think about God, do you think Father? When you think about these folks who are sitting around you, is brother more than just a casual title? Is it something that really means that much to you? If it's not, I'd like to talk with you. Several others would be happy to have that conversation as well. That means something's missing. I'm not up here to create discontent. I was doing fine with my religion until Brother Mark got up here and told me I was supposed to be more than it is. I'm just saying there's more there than that. Don't shortchange yourself. Don't be on the edge. Come together. Get involved in each other's lives, and more importantly, develop the kind of attitude towards serving God that brings you into contact with Jesus and the rest of the family. If you're not enjoying that right now, it may be because you are not a part of the family. I have a lot of people come through my life who are not a part of my family, and they do not enjoy the privileges that go along with that, or the responsibilities for that matter. It may be that you have been a part of God's family. You know, not all children are obedient all the time. That's the story, one of the stories of the prodigal son, right? That son was still a son, even when he was disobedient. But he had removed himself from fellowship. His disobedience had removed him from fellowship. Maybe that's you. Maybe something in your life has erected a barrier between you and the kind of family that you need to be connected to. Maybe you're just hurting. And you're looking for a relationship of sufficient intimacy so that you can share that pain and find somebody to care. It may be that if that's what you need to make a response to this invitation tonight as well. Or it may be you just need to have a private conversation with somebody. I hope that you will. If you can't find somebody else, come talk to me. Our elders will be happy to talk with you. But I've got a feeling just about any one of these brothers and sisters sitting around here would be happy to feel that you're that close and to provide service for you. Many of us have benefited from that. How many times I've had conversations that have been such an encouragement to me from a brother or sister because we shared that kind of fellowship. If you have some kind of a need that is a part of what it means to be a family, would you make that known? And if we can help you in some kind of a public way, do it as we stand and sing together.
Softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling, calling.